Welcome to Reboot Republic, the podcast that goes behind the headlines and looks at the big issues in this republic of inequality. We are the podcast of solutions and the podcast of hope. I'm your host, Rory Hearn, and today we are talking about hope and ideas, and I am absolutely delighted to be joined by a giant panel of young people who are wonderful change makers and going to rock this country and are already rocking it. And we have Claire Ostick, who's Welfare Officer with the Union of Students in Ireland, Alicia O'Sullivan, first-year law student in UCC and who represented Ireland at the first UN Climate Summit in New York. We have Luke Casserly, Deputy President of the Irish Second Level Students Union and host of the Incorrectors podcast, which is potentially a competitor with mine, but we'll see how that goes in the coming months and years. Student at DCU, and we are joined by Michelle Byrne, former campaigns officer, extraordinaire activist with USI and currently campaigner with Uplift, doing fantastic things. And Matthew Ryan, welfare officer with Irish Second Level Students Union, who is a poor bugger because he's actually doing his leaving cert. But hopefully this will provide a very brief momentary reprieve from that misery. So on Reboot, we love to and we try to give hope and ideas. And today's podcast is all about that. We're going to talk about Ireland, its future, and its future in particular to from the perspective and eyes and minds of young people and change makers. And I'm going to be asking the panel today, how do they see young people coping? How do they think they're being listened to? Are we taking mental health serious, or is it just lip service? And what about issues like housing, homelessness? What are their views on it? The future? What future Ireland do we have? And how are they taking action to changing this country? Is this the republic they want to see, or how are they going to go about bringing that about? And as always, we need you to fund us to keep going here on Reboot and the Tortoise Shack. Become a patron, support us producing these podcasts. Go to patreon.com/Tortoise Shack to sign up, become a patron and support us. So firstly to you, Claire Ostick, Welfare Officer with the Union of Students Ireland in Ireland. Where are young people at now in terms of the pandemic, COVID? Just how are they coping, surviving?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks so much, Rory. I think the first of all, the pandemic has impacted on so many people, but I think young people and students have been a very vulnerable group in terms of going back to college, having it all being online, having a blended approach. And I suppose the kind of symbol of college is around transitioning, experimenting, trying new things, making new connections, finding yourself, self-development. So a lot of students haven't been able to do that. They haven't been able to fulfill the whole college experience. So this has definitely had like a huge impact on student mental health. Student mental health has been a huge issue before COVID-19, but COVID-19 has just kind of shed light and exposed, I suppose, the severity of it all. So a lot of young people are definitely struggling. They're not able to make those connections and able to have that sense of belonging, part of the campus community. So it's definitely been a huge issue on them over the last couple of weeks.
And in terms of, you know, you're saying, you know, mental health is a big issue. Do you feel that there's, you know, an element of lip service going on to this kind of, you know, whole, you know, mental health, everybody's talking about, the Taoiseach is talking about it, you know, the HSE is on about, suddenly they all care about mental health when, you know, we still have major problems. Do you feel that?
So like I mentioned, like student mental health has been an issue way before COVID-19 hit. And I suppose if you really care about an issue and you really want to make it, I suppose, improve it, funding would be allocated towards it year on year. So what we're looking for is sustainable core funding, which is allocated to colleges on an annual basis to make sure that the counselling services, the other support services around mental health are able to expand and be adequate enough to meet students where they're at in terms of their needs. So we saw that 5 million was allocated to student mental health back in July. 2 million was from the year before that, and then 3 million was an additional allocation for counselling services and for assistant psychologists and wellbeing initiatives. But this is a kind of once-off funding again that was seen in this year's budget, whereas we need, I suppose, more funding year on year to make sure that these services are able to reduce the staff and student waiting list to make sure that students are seen, but not also just focus on student counselling, that there has to be psychiatrists, that there has to be GPs, mental health nurses. There's so many professionals out there that offer supports, and it's supposed to, I suppose, have like a multidisciplinary approach to dealing with mental health.
So do you have, in terms of like, you know, students coming to you or contacting you saying, you know, we need help, but we can't access services?
So I suppose on a normal basis without COVID, the face-to-face counselling services, I suppose, have long waiting lists up to 6 weeks, whereas now a lot of services have gone online, where they're operating on like a helpline basis, or there's the text 508 number, so it's kind of via text basis, where there's also email services. But there's definitely still, like, the services need to be expanded. There needs to be funding put behind it to make sure that every single person who reaches out for support and finally makes that decision to reach out for support, that they're able to be supportive of whatever they're going through.
And in terms of students, and obviously I'm a lecturer, so do you know what I mean? I'm on the other side dishing out the material and trying to get you all to do something, and trying to do lectures to 80 letters on the screen, and seeing are any of them actually there or not. And how it must be such a radically reduced, you know, student experience in terms of that online experience. What feedback are USI getting around that, or how do students feel? And obviously there's the housing issue still there as well, and the whole issue of, you know, rent's not been returned. And
yeah, absolutely. So I'm glad you kind of mentioned the college experience, because it's so much more than just the academic side of things. And you take clubs, societies, volunteering opportunities, new initiatives that are approaching. So that all kind of plays into the student experience, and students can't avail of that. So just in terms of, I suppose, the kind of academic side of things, there's been quite a few difficulties with Wi-Fi connections or the assessment side of things. Students, I suppose, getting anxiety around deadlines or assignments, or time tests, because if their Wi-Fi is down and they can't avail of it, and then they have to reach out to the lecturer for support. So that kind of adds an additional layer of stress that might not have been there previously. And in terms of reaching out for supports, if some students don't understand the problem or a part of their course, under normal circumstances, the student might have been able to talk to the lecturer with the 5 minutes after the class. Whereas now on a Zoom call, the lecturer very often will switch off, or it's a lot more difficult to put themselves forward when people are still on the line. So there's still a lot of challenges out there.
Yeah. No, that's a very good point. And I would absolutely see that with students. And, you know, and I do have students coming forward to me, you know, saying, you know, there's all sorts of implications of COVID, you know, even in terms of them getting sick. And, you know, but the digital thing really impacts. I can see that around access and people, you know, not being able to, as you say, that student coming up to you after class and being able to raise an issue. Alicia O'Sullivan, thanks, Claire, for that. Alicia O'Sullivan, you know, you're, you know, a first year student, and how do you find it, or how do you see, you know, students and how they're doing at the moment, and young people in general, in terms of how do you feel about COVID? Because there's been a lot of, you know, focus on, you know, the lockdowns and everything. And my sense is there hasn't been much consideration of how this has impacted on young people.
Yeah, I agree. I think definitely, like, I would echo what Claire said about how it's not just, you know, academic, like college, like massive parts of like the college experiences, you know, going into a lecture and sitting next to someone new in that those first 2 weeks and talking to them, meeting with them, societies and all of these things, you know, I've never experienced. So now I'm experiencing them very differently. And obviously the older kind of people in the societies and things are saying, oh, it's so different, it's so bad. And not bad in the sense that it's not able to work, but it's not the same as it was, unfortunately. And I suppose in terms of young people with COVID, like, I personally feel that, you know, there is a cohort of people who don't sympathize enough with young people in the period that, you know, Claire referred to, in the transition period of, you know, I missed my debs, I missed my graduation, I missed, you know, freshers week. And I don't mean to sound, you know, super privileged giving out about these things when there's obviously, you know, people losing loved ones, and that's probably the worst if not the complete worst thing that could happen to someone in the last few months when it comes to COVID. But, you know, it's about allowing young people to, you know, be upset and feel not guilty for being upset, for missing those things. Because I feel like as a society, I wouldn't have noticed it so much before, but probably was a thing. But now more so, we're not allowing people to feel angry over, you know, their businesses being shut. We're not allowed, you know, anger in the sense of, you know, it's a normal feeling to be angry and frustrated and upset over these things. And we have to allow people to, you know, go through that process and not shame people for these natural feelings. Because, you know, it's, as of right now, like, you know, it's completely unprecedented. So for young people, I think obviously there's that whole minority of young people who are breaking regulations and things, but it's definitely not the majority of us. And I think, you know, a bit of sympathy for the period of our lives that we're in, you know, supposed to be the best years of our lives. And I'm stuck in front of a laptop all day in a tiny student accommodation. So I think, you know, a bit of sympathy towards our generation wouldn't go so far.
No, I completely agree with you. And I think, you know, some of the portrayal, and again, it's a lot of this, you know, within society and trying to focus on who's to blame for the problems and picking out a group. And often it is a vulnerable group to blame them. And, you know, young people have absolutely been, you know, vilified in that sense. And I think that it is, you know, I absolutely agree with you. And it's, you know, the loss of this period, and not just for students, but for young people in general, in terms of that relationships, everything, you know, that whole period in which you go out and you try and, you know, start developing your own life and your own identity. And do you think that there's a feeling of isolation?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, like, even for me, like, obviously I'm from West Cork, so it's only an hour and a half from here. But still, with the restrictions at the moment, it's not possible to go home, like, as regularly as I obviously would have liked in my first year of college. And definitely, like, I suppose, you know, whether it's a good thing or a bad thing, maybe people who are, you know, student guidance counsellors wouldn't agree with me in saying this. But, you know, with Freshers Week and that week of where you're going to college and there's like clubs and societies like giving you free things and, you know, you get to go out and meet new people. It's not blanket coating that sense of, you know, moving away from home and maybe feelings of loneliness and stuff like that. But it definitely helps in the process of, you know, you're meeting new people, you get to go out and have fun. And maybe your mind isn't exactly where it is as of now with this year and being in first year where you're literally in a room on your own. You know, you don't get to meet people face to face. So therefore, your even your sense of like human interaction is so much less than it would have been, say, in last year's class. So I think definitely a sense of isolation and you're kind of, you know, we've been deprived of that sense of kind of intense human interaction that happens in the first few weeks of college, which can, you know, help people move away from home and kind of gather a sense of independence before they're, you know, they kind of get into the normal routine of things. So we've kind of been thrown into moving away and dealing with college all on our own. You know, you don't have someone to physically turn to in a lecture being like, do you know what's going on? Because I don't have a clue. And I feel like that kind of sense of interaction is definitely being missed. Like,
Yeah. That's great. Thanks, Alicia. Luke Casserly, would you agree with Alicia there? What's your sense? Do you think young people aren't being like the impact of the whole pandemic and COVID and is on young people has not been considered in the kind of the general public debate?
Yeah, definitely. Look, I have to agree with Alicia. I mean, I'm in the exact same position in first year in college, you know, went through the kind of leaving cert debacle earlier in the year. That was crazy. Yeah. I think the thing that kind of got us through, and I can only speak for, you know, this group of young people who went through the leaving cert and now transitioned to college, you know, because I, from speaking to people, you know, hearing the experience, the thing that kind of got us through those crazy few months was, you know, at the end of the day, we'll hopefully get to go to college and move on in life. But obviously that didn't happen. You know, people tried to get accommodation at the start, you know, to move. And then, you know, a lot like myself, I hoped to move to Dublin, but that just wasn't possible. So now I'm kind of stuck in Longford in my room. I feel like I don't leave this room that I'm in, you know, stay, look at my laptop all day, every day. And like Alicia, I don't want to sound like some sort of privileged, bratty person giving out about my life, because obviously I'm very lucky to have a place in college. But I think it definitely takes a toll on your mental health and your physical health. You know, when you should be experiencing all these, you know, really important milestones in your life, instead you're stuck in your family home like you were last year. And to be honest, you know, obviously government needs to take into account the crisis we're in at the minute in terms of the pandemic. But I really don't know if young people are in their minds at all or if we're being considered. Now, I don't know what they could do. But I feel like, you know, we paid $3,000 to be in college this year. And I think people have pointed out that, you know, Netflix costs like €200 a year for a streaming service. And it feels like that's what I'm trying to subscribe to right now. It's a streaming service, but except for college.
Yeah.
And I'm loving it. But, you know, there's no experience. I don't feel like I'm having an experience. I feel like I'm just kind of in my house all day, every day. And I know that's how a lot of other young people feel. It's just missing out on that experience and the kind of emotional toll that's taken. And, you know, luckily I'm someone who wouldn't have struggled with mental health in the past, but, you know, it's even taken a toll on me to be kind of stuck inside all day and barely seeing people. You know, the most exciting part of my week is going to work at the weekend where I actually get to see people, which is hilarious. Like, that's reality.
Yeah. Thanks, Luke. Michelle Byrne, in terms of, you know, your own kind of sense of, you know, this impact on young people. And I know you've been very active around, for example, the Debenham workers and, you know, how disgracefully they've been treated and, you know, around issues, you know, broadly around mental health services and people, a lot of people who are, you know, low paid workers, and a lot of young people are low paid workers. And, you know, there's a lot of people at the margins of society, and not just the margins, but across society, young people who are really, really suffering and been excluded. What's your kind of sense of how young people are being treated during this pandemic?
Yeah, well, I suppose I still consider myself a young person, and like one of the things that I
definitely would consider you a young person, Michelle. Absolutely.
Still in the 30s, it's all good. But yeah, no, one of the things that I kind of noticed was I actually started a new job during the pandemic. So obviously navigating that as a young person working online, work from home, I've only met my colleagues once, and that was to move out of our office, which is very sad. So I'm working with a few people I've you know, met once, and it's very interesting. And I suppose, like, obviously I'm involved in a number of different campaigns, but I'm definitely seeing like a growth in that. And like, that's potentially young people as well, as people engaging in like digital campaigning and online campaigning. Like, it's been around for a while, but there's definitely, we've seen an uplift anyway, a growth in the numbers of people who are engaging. Like, we now have 336,000 members who are taking action regularly in our campaigning community. And that's like anything from signing a petition or sending an email to their TD, calling their TD, tweeting their TD. It's everyone taking this coordinated action. And I think that young people are kind of like, you know, using their energy now. And like, obviously young people they're sick of listening to like their parents telling them to get off their phone, but you know, there is a way to use this for good as well, and like use that for the activism. And like, we definitely saw ahead of the budget, like with Uplift, we were on a number of different campaigns. We had like a huge petition of like 50,000 signatures of people who had signed it. And we had the minister, the junior minister for mental health, Mary Butler, actually agreed to accept that petition of 50,000 signatures.
And what was that calling for, Michelle?
For 24/7 mental health care in the community. So it's bringing that localized community care. And I think when we're talking about COVID, like, it, and 5 kilometer restrictions, like, community care has definitely it's never been more right, the right time for that to happen. And I think, like, when we think about the fact that we can't travel, or, you know, if people have access to mental health, or can't travel abroad, or if they're in college, like, all of those things are barriers. And I think that was something that captured the moment in the middle of the pandemic, that people were like, this petition, this cause, this campaign is so vitally important. And we delivered that to the minister in this huge 20 meter long petition that we got printed, and really visual. And one of the members who actually came to help us deliver it was Faye, who's age 12. So like, it really shows you how this is not just, you know, like, if every age is being affected by this and wants to get behind these campaigns. That was really kind of, when we saw that snowball, like, it was very, very obvious that mental health needed to be on the agenda ahead of the budget. And I suppose, like, we did see, like, some money come through in the budget, 50 million, which is brilliant. But we need to make sure that that's on new services, not just plugging the gap of what the strain that COVID is going to be on. We already know that the mental health services were well under-resourced before this lockdown, as other people have said as well. And we need to make sure that this is additional support, not just plugging the holes that were already there.
And just specifically on that, because I think it's an important thing to briefly talk about, is that whole issue of access to 24-hour care. like what is the situation at the moment if someone is, you know, in serious crisis situation on a weekend, for example, at 2 a.m?
Yeah, so many people will end up actually using emergency services in hospitals, which many don't find a suitable place to be in. And often, you know, people aren't equipped to be dealing with that, or might not be a suitable setting for people to walk into. And often they have to wait around, as you do in A&Es or SKUs, yeah, as in the Irish hospitals. And, you know, it might not be suitable at all. So the idea of the mental health services being going through the emergency departments is maybe not the most ideal and not suitable. And if we had better access to proper specific mental health services, that would be much more appropriate for dealing with people who are going through a crisis at the time.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think it is something that I think needs to be, you know, looked at. And maybe, you know, I'll come to all of you after I go to Matthew, just on the idea that to me, there seems to be like this individualization or individualized approach to mental health. Like, it's your responsibility, rather than seeing that, you know, the responsibility of the state to provide proper services. And I even Googled there at the start before we came on, I was just Googling, you know, 24-hour access. And you see all these, you know, private services there that are available for 24 hours, yet where is the public system? And I think it really brings up that. And I'll ask you to comment, maybe you could have a think about that while I go to Matthew, in terms of that, you know, how do we shift that and why are we in that situation? Matthew, just in terms of Matthew Ryan, your own, you know, you're a Leaving Cert student and, you know, yeah, my heart goes out. It really does, genuinely, you know, it does. In terms of this situation, like, you know what you're going to be facing into, are you doing continuous assessment or is it
that's kind of the question at the minute. We're hearing from the department that, you know, they are dead set on giving us a traditional Leaving Cert, which I suppose after seeing the predicted grades last year, it is a better system for us, but it is also stressful because, you know, there's the whole issue of students being over assessed at the minute because teachers simply just don't know what they're meant to be doing, you know. Yeah. And they don't know, is this test going to be important, is it not? Because I'm just finished my pre-pre's last week, which none of the teachers know, you know, are these going to be important down the line, you know.
Yeah.
So it really is kind of a case sometimes of kind of the blind leading the blind, because teachers can only do what they're given, you know. They can't magically make information appear. They have to go off their better judgment and kind of, you know, work with what they have at their disposal, which unfortunately isn't a lot this year. But, you know, they are trying, to be fair to teachers. They really are trying their best. And that's something I think I say for all students, that teachers, you know, they are going through it just as much as we are. Mm. And, you know, they're just as unsure as we are. And I really would, you know, like to say that they are trying as well as they can.
Yeah. And how do you know, Leaving Certs dealing with that situation where we don't know, are we actually going to be doing a Leaving Cert? Or do you just go, I'm just going to try and study as much as I can anyway to be prepared? Or,
yeah, I think it very much so is a kind of thing of just, you know, take it day by day, because it is very easy to get bogged down in the whole, oh, I have to do this amount, I have to do that, and it could be this and it could be that. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's still the Leaving Cert. It's still the study you've been doing for the last 2 years. And it's about just trying to, you know, keep as much of a level head as you can, do what you can, and just take it day by day. If you have a test, study for that test. And I know it's not easy, even talking to my own friends and seeing students from around the country, you know, people are stressed, and they're more so stressed this year, because not only are we doing a Leaving Cert, but we're doing a Leaving Cert during a global pandemic, you know. And how many children out there can say that they've lived through a global pandemic where their entire country was closed down for months and their schools were closed? And, you know, I think the biggest kind of impact of that, you know, back on the 12th of March last year is, you know, humans as, you know, a being are so go, go, go all the time. And then that lockdown came around, we were forced to just stop. Mm. You know, it was one day we were going and then it was just stop. And it was kind of nothing from that point. It was just stop, which is difficult for us. And I think we're still coming out of that, because we stopped and then we were put back into it. But we weren't put back into what we knew. We were put back into a completely new system in schools with masks and social distancing, and you can't eat your lunch with your friends in the same way, and you can't kick the ball around at lunch the same way you used to be, or you can't bump into someone in the corridor in between classes and chat to them, you know. So we were plunged from kind of one very familiar system to one that we've never seen before, which I think it has been a strain on students, and it's a lot of pressure. And, you know, students are tired, you know, that's the bottom line. You know, even myself, like, I came home today and I was doing some study, and my cat came into my room, and I knelt down to, you know, rub her for a while, and then I woke up an hour later on the floor, you know. It's tough for students, and they are trying to get through it, but, you know, we are striving to do our best while also trying to control 100 other things going on around us. It gets tiring for students, you know. It's like I said already, it's stressful enough doing a Leaving Cert, but we've got all these other factors, you know. You've got to clean your desks, you've got to wear your mask, you've got to sanitize your hands, you've got to wash your hands, and then you can't forget to do that. So, you know, it's tiring. And mental health has become obviously a huge issue. It always has been, but, you know, if nothing else, the pandemic has brought it to the forefront. I think it was Claire who said, you know, it has highlighted the many weaknesses that exist in it. And I think, you know, secondary schools are in kind of a different position, you know, because each school has their guidance council stuff. And we did see that, you know, thankfully the guidance council hours were reinstigated back to what they were before the cut back in 2012, I think it was.
Yeah.
But then it's kind of like you're given that and it's like, yeah, they've been reinstated. But then it's how does that actually relate to students then? You know, it's kind of like it gets so far, but then it never actually gets to where it needs to be, which is the issue with mental health resources, because it's great having all these resources and it's great having them at your disposal. But if they never actually reach the people that need them, then there's no point in having them. So it's about carrying it all the way to the end. And I think that's, you know, a point that really needs to be looked at, because, you know, you can provide as many services as you need, but if they're not reaching the people at the end of the day, they're not reaching the people. And that is the issue. Like you were saying, even when you were looking up, you know, what is the system for someone on a Saturday at 2 a.m. who needs help? You know, what is it that they can do? You know, like Michelle was saying, A&Es, they're busy. They've got long lines. It's not exactly where you want to be going at 2 a.m. on a Saturday, you know. And, you know, even myself as the welfare officer, you know, you'd think that I would know about as many of the resources out there, and I would know probably more than most students would. But I had to go and research them, and I really had to look for, you know, what resources are there. So the average student is, especially in second level, you know, they do struggle to find the help they need, which is obviously a huge issue.
And Matthew, the Justin, I suppose, how do you see kind of the way, as I asked the others as well, you know, young people have been portrayed, talked about, you know, in the media. We've seen such, you know, negative comments, you know, and the focus on these, you know, house parties, and, you know, bloody house parties are to blame for the whole lot, you know, spreading the coronavirus. And it's, you know, and initially, obviously, you know, and been a parent of young children as well, I saw, you know, was really annoyed at the start, the whole vector idea, you know, and children were vectors, and that was more about younger children. But there was this general sense, and I think, you know, within the whole debate, there's been either a silencing, like, you know, no voice of young people at all, or this kind of as I said, kind of focusing on the negative behavior and blaming. How do you feel the kind of young people have been kind of engaged with or talked about in the whole kind of public debate during this pandemic?
Yeah, like you kind of hit the nail on the head there yourself, you know. And, you know, in the ICSU, we are kind of lucky because we represent, you know, from first year to sixth year. So there is a large age gap there. So we see all the ages, you know, and it does have an impact on it because, you know, especially in secondary school, you're still in that mentality of kind of, you know, herd mentality, follow the herd kind of thing.
Yeah.
And because you haven't found your individuality yet, because that kind of comes when you do transition to college. Now, not for everyone, but for a large proportion of young people. So it is difficult when you see in the media, you know, these older people being kind of portrayed in that way. And then it's kind of like, it's hurtful for students because, you know, like Alicia touched on, it's not every student, and it's very easy to talk about students without them, you know. It's very easy to just pin it on them because they're young and they're, you know, you expect young people to be at parties and you expect them to be this, that, and the other. But when you don't actually include students in the conversation, you don't actually hear on, you know, ground zero what it actually is students are going through. So it is difficult to see, you know, in the news that, you know, like you're saying, children are vectors and it's all young people's fault that it's being spread, when, you know, it's not all our fault. Everyone in society has a role to play in protecting each other and in, you know, beating this pandemic. So, you know, it's tough to see when young people are pinned with all this blame, but then they're not even talked to or included in the conversation. And then when they try to get included in the conversation, which is about them, they've got to, you know, jump, crawl, scratch and scream to even get a word in. So it can be difficult. And especially for the younger people, like, you know, first years who have started out this year in a very different year, it's tough for them to see, you know, this is what I'm coming into. This is what I'm being handed with going forward into my years, you know, this kind of, you know, demonization of young people that during this pandemic, we were all out, you know, going mad every weekend and we were all on top of each other and we were spreading the virus and we were the root evil of all of it, which, you know, is quite an inaccurate portrayal of a lot of young people, you know?
Yeah. Thanks, Matthew. No, that's it's really, really insightful and fair play to you. You know, speaking like this, it's really impressive. I have to say, as a young person, it's very impressive. So fair play to you. Claire, and I'm not being, what's the word? The word's gone out of my head. This is what happens when you have too many young kids. You actually can't think after 8 o'clock in the evening. Claire, Hostick, in terms of that, what I was talking about earlier, it's something that really annoys me, is this whole kind of lack of kind of taking responsibility by government and the state institutions of, you know, the way in which their policies have led us to this situation where we don't have the supports in place for people, and that a lot of the mental health discussion is about the individual's responsibility rather than the structures in society and the role that a state should have in providing the services. Would you agree with that? Or
Absolutely. I 100% agree with that. And I think even on a few things that the previous speakers mentioned on about having like a 24/7 helpline service or even some kind of service that those people who need to avail of help can get the help there and then. And then just another example that I wanted to touch on earlier, which I didn't get a chance to, was just on the student accommodation as well, in relation to government not following through with promises, or I suppose not reacting to certain things to help young people in a terrible situation. And we would have seen back in March when students, I suppose, were taken advantage of, when they weren't given back their prepaid rents, their deposits, and they were asked to leave student accommodation without any kind of flexibility to their contracts. And then I suppose the government was made well aware of this, and they didn't really do anything about it. So then starting in September, many students had to make the decision to either go for student accommodation, pay the huge amounts of rent and the deposit. And just a reminder that the rent and coupled with the cost of fees remains one of the largest barriers in terms of accessing education in Ireland to this day. So the government, again, once ignored the calls of the young people and didn't put any kind of protections or security in place. So now a lot of students are out of lots of money, their parents have to pay for properties and I suppose rooms that they can't avail of. Some students are still paying for the rooms in the hope that they can avail of them in semester two, or some people have actually moved into the student accommodation complexes and have no kind of social support around them because they're quite isolated with the restrictions. So this has been a huge issue, and I suppose something that USI has been quite vocal on and advocated on behalf. So that's just another example to kind of show young people taking action and wanting support from the government and not having been listened to.
Yeah, no, I think it is a very good example, and it's something close to my own heart that I've been highlighting for years in relation to, and in USI, in my many years ago when I used to be in USI, the whole housing issue has been something, of course, it's linked to wider the lack of consideration of housing being a fundamental role in our society and a home and a human right, which has to be changed. Thanks, Claire, on that, and I'll come back to you again. I'm conscious of our time, that we could do a few hours in this podcast. I think I'll have to have you back, guys, definitely. One last one to all of you, and we'll make it a big one. The question is this a good country to be a young person in, Alicia?
Oh, no pressure.
No pressure at all.
I think it is a good country to be a young person in. I mean, look, there's faults with everything, and what I will say about the mental health services is that we're talking about wait lists for some very serious services that you would go to if you were, you know, self-harming or, you know, very serious kind of situations that young people would be in. The reason we have those wait lists is because we don't have very good or at all, like we're talking about, private helplines. We don't have good early intervention services in this country for young people, or for any people, to be quite honest. And we think of CAMHS, which is the Children Adolescents Mental Health Services, which is the HSE service for mental health, which would be for quite serious mental health problems. There was a stage where, you know, you weren't getting into that service for 6 months unless you were self-harming. which is like that in a sentence in itself is
it's just
extremely upsetting and wrong. So this is what we're facing with, and this is what we're talking about, these services like helplines, like being able to go to a counselor if you need one, and they're not being, you know, having to be in such a serious state. Like they're literally saying, you know, you have to be at this point for us to be able to help you. Like if you had a broken arm and someone told you, well, sorry, it's going to be 6 months. Like, I mean, it's ridiculous. So I think there's huge pros to being a young person in this country. I mean, I certainly have had so many opportunities, whether it's within ISSU or in regards to the climate movement. But we also do have serious issues such as that one.
Yeah, yeah. And fine, and I'll ask each of you then as well on, I'll come back to you at the end, Lisa, one last one on what do you think young people can do to take action to change it, which is an important one. What do you think are the key areas to change? Luke, in terms of Ireland, is it a good country to be a young person in? And maybe you could say, you know, what do you think young people can do to make it better? Or what do you think needs to be made better as well?
Yeah, God, it's definitely a tough question, Rory, but I do think, like, look, it is a good place to be a young person. And I think even though there's so many things wrong with the country, as we've mentioned today, you know, whether it's mental health or education, but the thing that kind of gives me faith is, you know, through my work with the ICSU, I see so many amazing young people across the country who really do care about equality, who care about fairness, and who think, you know, about the future with solution-based approaches. And, you know, you just need to look at whether it's the climate strikes with thousands of young people from across the country going to the Dáil to protest, or whether it's with the Leaving Cert with thousands of people mobilising online to bring about change. I think, you know, if we imagine this generation in a few years' time, I think we're going to be, like, blessed with really capable leaders. What can people do to, you know, bring about that change? I think for our generation, it's to keep doing what we're doing, because I think there's never been a more socially aware generation than our generation. So that gives me hope. I do think a barrier that stands in the way of that is, you know, we touch on mental health. I think another problem is our education system. I think, you know, we kind of big up our education system in this country and say that it's a great system in comparison to other countries. And it's precisely that, though. It's a system. I don't think it takes into account the kind of individuality of students themselves. Instead, we have a kind of elitist education system where you can kind of buy your way to a good quality education if you have the money. And that's at second level and third level. You know, we have a system, it's at second level where there's, you know, elitist grind schools where people with money can send their kids to get the best quality education. And in turn, you know, kind of teacher exam test system to get the best points. Then you move to third level where it's dramatically underfunded, and USI and ISSU have worked on education funding for years, and governments have just kicked down the road, ignored it, and acted like if they ignored enough, the problem is just going to go away. That's one problem I see, but I think this generation can kind of keep up the fight and hopefully change it eventually.
Great. That's a nice bit of hope there, Luke. Thanks for that. Michelle Byrne, what's your sense of, you know, is it a good country to be a young person in? And I know in terms of Uplift, you've got, you know, there's so many amazing things you're doing. And I really, you know, would encourage people to check out Uplift and what they're doing. And there's lots of campaigns. But, you know, maybe I assume you will give that as the example of how people can bring about change. But maybe you could, what's your sense?
Absolutely. Like, and that's what's going to get us through this, is the coming together to campaign to make these things better. Like, obviously, like, Uplift, we see all of the campaigns come in. So it does really seem like there is some, the crisis after crisis, whether it's mental health or housing or climate action or political scandal. We see everything come in through campaigns that people are passionate about. But the one thing is, people are passionate and they are willing to fight through this pandemic, and making sure that their voices are heard. And I think we can do that together. I think there's a real sense here of community that we've kind of got that idea now, really through the pandemic, whether that's on your street, through those Zoom calls, in your lectures or in the group chats. We really are coming together to support each other. I know that that's where we need to put the onus on, like, having those supportive communities. And, like, obviously Uplift allows for people to do that as a campaigning community and fight for issues that matter to you. And anyone can set up a petition and start a campaign on Uplift. And it makes it really accessible for people to fight for what they care about or join some of the causes that other people have started to fight on. And like, we've seen thousands and thousands of emails sent over the pandemic to TDs through our technology or petitions or phone calls, even on the mental health petition that we did and the campaign that we did with mental health reform in the lead up to the budget. We had 2,500 emails sent on that campaign alone and 100 phone calls and tweets directly to TDs. And I suppose that's one thing that does give me hope, is that we do have like that access to the political system, that we can campaign and put pressure to make those changes. And I think young people will be a pivotal role in that, because we have such access to digital tools, most of us do anyway. And we're so used to using technology. And I think this is where young people can really get on. Like, we've seen Trump react in such a way when like young people took to TikTok to campaign against him, to the point where he wants to ban TikTok. So, you know, young people are doing something right with technology, and campaigning is the way to go.
Very good. Great, Michelle. Thanks a million. It's so wonderful, as always, to have you on. Matthew, just how do you feel? Do you feel hopeful about your future in Ireland, or how do you feel?
Yeah, I mean, like, it's a big question there. It is
a big question. I'm poking a big one. I am.
And look, Ireland has its fair share of things swept under the rug. I think none of us are naive to that. We have a lot to fix and a lot to put right. Yeah. But I think young people, I think one of our biggest superpowers is we see everything, you know, every finger our government lifts, we're there. Every breath they take, we're there. You know, like Michelle touched on, the digital media and like technology, you know, the doll is just a camera away. You know, we see everything and we're engaged with everything. And the second that our government does something that, you know, goes against young people, we're right there, we're on the ball. And I think, you know, like Luke mentioned as well, like, have you ever seen a generation that's been so socially active and socially aware and who care about each other and care about a future for all? So am I hopeful? Yes. Is there a lot of work to be done? Of course. But, you know, we're getting there. And I think if we carry on the way we're going, and if we keep taking it day by day, and if we keep that pressure on, and if we keep our eyes open, I think, you know, there's a lot of hope there, and there's a lot of reason to be hopeful there for the future in Ireland.
Great. Thanks a million, Matthew. Claire Ostick from the Union Students of Ireland, what do you think? Should we be hopeful, or, you know, you think of social media, we think of, you know, AI, climate, all these massive issues that, you know, kind of put dark clouds in our future, and inequality, and all these things need to be addressed. And, you know, how do young people hold hope at the moment?
So I think, first of all, the question around is Ireland a good country to be in when you're a young person? I think it's, first of all, it's so complex and it's multi-layered. My initial answer was, yes, there's lots of opportunities. It's safe. Ireland, generally speaking, is quite safe. There's lots of things to do. And I suppose
you're looking for a job from Port Fáilte there, is it?
But the basic needs are met. But then when you kind of dig deeper into it and you think of healthcare, access to education, the climate emergency, and I suppose accommodation, these are all huge issues that I suppose don't appear to be fixed. I don't see anything a huge amount of movement happening in the next 10-20 years. I'd like it to, but I think there's just so much to it. And when it comes to those four things, and there's lots more that I can mention, but I suppose access to healthcare, education, a roof over someone's head, those are all huge things that each person should be entitled to. And it shouldn't be dependent on where you're living, what family you're born into, how much money you have. So in terms of that, I think there's a lot of challenges for young people in Ireland. However, having said that, yes, I am hopeful. I think young people speaking are absolutely incredible. If you look at the recent referenda in terms of marriage equality, repeal, a lot of awareness around direct provision, consent, mental health awareness, all of those kind of huge big topics have been driven by young people, and young people speaking up and taking a lead and organising protests and rallies and petitions and campaigns. So in terms of that, young people act and they speak up when something unfair is going on, and they educate themselves to make sure that they have the facts and have the tools to kind of be active and do something on it. And so I think young people are definitely driving the change and leading the change in those key areas that I mentioned, but Ireland has a lot of work to do as a country. But I am very hopeful for the future, because young people are just brilliant when it comes to being active and taking an active participation, leading role in, I suppose, delivering on the change they want to see.
Great, Claire Ostick, that's absolutely fantastic. I think I could, that's just wonderful. I think that's just wonderful. That's brilliant. Last word to you, Alicia O'Sullivan. What's your kind of, I suppose, sense of, you know, where Ireland's at? What can young people do? And, you know, there's clearly a wave of progressive change, do you know what I mean? And social push for social change from young people, but that's going to be resisted, you know, and is being resisted from different people who hold privilege, who don't want to give up power. You know, inequality suits certain people. You know, so it's not going to be done easily to make that kind of change to a very equal Ireland.
Yeah, well, you know, to that I say they can resist all they want, but we're not going to stop. And as well, like, I am hopeful because, you know, for young people, and I'm sure for everyone on this call who's, you know, a young person in this sort of shall we say realm, it's you're constantly met with walls and people telling you that it's not going to get anywhere and that you give up now. And, you know, sometimes people even don't tell you that specifically, but it can feel like that. But you know what, screw that, because we're the policymakers of tomorrow, we're the doctors of tomorrow, the engineers of tomorrow. We are going to be in those positions sometime in the future. And, you know, we've seen younger people running for, you know, elections, local elections. Younger people are pushing into that space. And I think that's only going to improve. And, you know, we are the future, but actually we're here right now, already doing it and pushing into those spaces. So I'm very hopeful because soon we'll take all their jobs and take over.
That's great. Listen, Alicia, Luke, Claire, Matthew, Michelle, thank you so much for joining me on Reboot Republic today. I really do feel buoyed up by that conversation and very, very hopeful. And I do completely agree with you. I think that, you know, there is definitely, you are the most socially aware generation. And what is so positive is that in Ireland, you know, there's such a progressive kind of momentum behind it. And like the voices, like your voices are about social justice, equality, inclusion. It's not just like, you know, change, you know, we're young people, so we want change. You're very clear about the type of change you want to see. And I think that's really wonderful and hopeful. When Ireland does have such a dark, you know, dark past and so many things where people were excluded, that it would be incredible. And I do believe it's going to happen, that in your lifetimes, in our lifetimes, we will see that republic of equality that we all want to see. So let's keep working towards it. And you are absolutely inspiring. So thank you all for that. And that is today's Reboot Republic. And please sign up, become a patron, tortoiseshack.ie, check us out, and go to patreon.com/tortoiseshack, become a patron, support us to keep going, keep these voices of hope pumped out here, and we'll talk to you all soon.